What's the significance for Perl of Netscape offering to release its source code to the public?
Well, the significance to Perl is really the significance to the freeware community as a whole. And since Perl is just one example of freeware, it will ride along on whatever effects the announcement has on the entire freeware community. I think there are several specific effects that we will have. One is hopefully this will result in increasing availability of freeware to consumers in general. Up till now, freeware has not gotten any respect, so to speak. And if it's possible that something can push the freeware movement over the edge into respectability, this could well do that. I'm hoping that it will do that. On the other hand, what I think the biggest influence will be within corporate culture. The effect of increasing the acceptance of people writing freeware within corporate America. When I started doing freeware 10, 15 years ago, I sort of had to do it surreptitiously and kind of publish it on the sly. I knew if I'd asked for permission back then, you know, they would have given it off to the lawyers for 6 months, and they'd come back and said, no, you can't.
You were working within an organization, and...
Yes. Yes. And so... nowadays, I'm hopeful that with this announcement, more corporate interests will become aware of the fact that you can actually make money on freeware. Certainly, I've made... a respectable living off of freeware.
What's the message? How do you make money off of freeware?
By providing services around it. That can be anywhere from writing books about it, which is how I've made most of my money, or providing support, just in good terms of goodwill. You know, Netscape has always had a certain amount of goodwill for more or less giving away their browsers, and now they're just giving away the source as well, essentially. So, in a sense, what they're doing is not all that different from what they were doing already. They're just kind of admitting it.
What might a Perl-enhanced browser do, and how might that work with other freeware software like an Apache server? Or how could we expect to see Perl implemented in a browser?
Well, Perl is... quite embeddable and has been embedded in many things. The thing that's nice about Perl is it's a language for getting you, if your regular program is for getting you from 0 to 60 miles an hour, Perl is a language for getting you from 60 to 100 miles an hour. And there are a couple of Perl slogans. One of them is there's more than one way to do it. That's the main slogan. But the secondary slogan is more applicable here, which is easy things should be easy and hard things should be possible. Well, your typical application makes easy things easy and makes hard things impossible. And they've tried to do some of the hard things being possible by extending with other languages like Java. But the problem with that is that Java is a language that doesn't particularly make things very easy to do. So, in a sense, it should be easy to do the hard things. And Perl is, I think, going to find a niche there. Particularly someday this year, we hope to release a version of the Perl compiler which will spit out Java bytecodes. So it will be able to run in that environment. I'm not too thrilled with Java as a language, but the idea of having a universal assembly language kind of appeals to me. And so if Java actually succeeds in getting that universal assembly language, and this is still in doubt, of course, if they do create that ecological niche, then that's just another architecture Perl will run on.
You said you're not too thrilled about Java as a language. Would you be able to characterize sort of the personality differences between Perl and Java and maybe touch on why you don't like it as a language?
Well, I don't generally try to disparage too many other people's languages. Language designers actually get along pretty well. It's usually their followers that get into fisticuffs. I'd say that Java, along with many other languages, falls into the trap of thinking that there's only one right way to do things. That's fine from a mathematical point of view if you're trying to go for a minimalistic kind of definition of your language, but people don't actually think that way or prefer to work that way. People actually prefer to spend a little more time learning a richer language, like English or Perl, which gives them more expressiveness. And so that's why the first Perl slogan is there's more than one way to do it.
What are the chances that the popular freeware consortium of, let's say, Perl and Apache and Linux have a chance against, say, Microsoft suite of IIS with VBScript and NT with its powerful marketing budget? Maybe this is another way of asking, where's the marketing budget for freeware?
Well, 2 years ago, the answer would have been basically nowhere. 2 years ago, Tim O'Reilly came to me and said, I believe in freeware. Half of the titles we publish are about freeware. We make a lot of money on freeware. We'd make more money on freeware if freeware did better. Therefore, we're going to try and help freeware do better. So, he came to me and said, do you want to work for us? I was at Loose Ends at the time, so I said, let's look for those intermediate models where, it's not, on the one hand, crass commercialism, and not, on the other hand, religious freewareism. There's an intermediate model there where, actually multiple intermediate models, whereby the commercial interests can help publicize the freeware, support the development, and essentially do the things that commercial people are good at while letting the freeware people continue to do what they were good at and get a symbiosis going rather than, as it was viewed back then, parasitism. Of course, the commercial people figured the freeware people were parasites and the freeware people figured the commercial people were parasites, but it shows the basic symmetry of the situation.
The difference here seems to be that even where there's commercialism in marketing and commercialism in support and commercialism in documentation, developers seem to bristle at the commercialism that gets in the way of development.
Yes, the real strength of the freeware community is in the rapid turnaround and the rapid pace of interaction between the developers. And that's why it's so important to have source code that is open, at least to the developers, and preferably to everybody. I think that there's a new movement afoot to call the free software movement the open source movement. I don't know whether that's going to go anywhere. It's a little more precise in some ways, but a little less useful of a definition in others. But if you have the sources available, you get a much more dynamic and complete development and testing, alpha testing kind of stuff. There's a paper that has been a paper by Eric Raymond entitled "The Cathedral and the Bazaar," which you may have heard of, which is a fairly seminal paper on the differences between these different styles of development. And of course, within those distinctions, there's further distinctions to be made. And the freeware community around Perl works in a slightly different way than the freeware community around Apache, and they in turn work differently than the community around Linux. And yet they're all very similar in that people want to contribute. They want to make their mark on the world. They get their value out of it by increased stature within the community. You know, to be able to say, well, you know, I helped the Pearl community do such and so, is a good thing on your resume. Let alone just having Pearl on your resume. Mm-hmm. I mean, the problem with most computer languages is that all they do is lengthen your resume by a word and a comma. But Pearl really has made a lot of people's resumes more valuable.
Can you characterize the differences in the development community or the styles of the development community between Pearl and either Linux or Apache?
Sure. Pearl's development community is they're all of them very flat organizations, but Pearl's may be flatter than most. About the only bump in the organizational chart is me. Pearl is a little different because, being a language, it would be very easy to spoil the language by having everybody add their favorite feature. Everyone wants to make Pearl into their own favorite language. And a language designer has to simultaneously be willing to borrow from all different languages and simultaneously resist the urge to borrow from all different languages. So I try to maintain artistic control over the development of the language itself. Therefore, I've reserved kind of absolute dictatorial power over the core of Pearl. Within that, people can basically do what they want, as long as I'm agreeable to it. And that's just talking about the core. The extension modules, I don't care what they do. I put the extension mechanism into Pearl so that people could do whatever they want with it, as long as they work through that interface. By contrast, the Apache model, they sort of have a dozen or so people who are all of the same level of authority in terms of the development of Apache. And that works well for Apache. I don't think it would work well for Pearl. It's sort of a little an oligarchy, if you will. Whereas mine is more of a benevolent dictatorship. Linux is almost more of a laissez-faire sort of thing. Well, it's probably closer to the Pearl model in that Linus keeps tight control of the center and then more towards the periphery he gives people more freedom. But
the feedback from the developer and user community, you were saying, is a lot quicker in a freeware environment rather than a corporate development environment. With that in mind, can you tell us what's coming up in the next version of Pearl and what's been asked for that isn't going to come so soon but might come later?
Okay. Pearl version 5.0.5 will contain multi-threading, and it will contain a compiler. Let's talk about multi-threading first. I don't think that most users will really care about multi-threading, and so we'll make it easy to ignore if you don't want to. On the other hand, for performance reasons, a lot of people writing servers would like to have multi-threaded support for Pearl for efficiency reasons. You can do multiple things simultaneously, and that's great. And so we'll make it pretty easy to do the multi-threading when they want it. And that falls into the category of hard things that should be possible, I think. The compiler, that's actually a kind of a misnomer, because Pearl has always had a compiler, in the sense that it parses Pearl down to an internal form and then executes that. What we mean when we say a compiler is a back-end, or actually a whole framework of back-ends, whereby we can do code generation to languages like C. With 5.0.5 will come the ability to generate C, the ability to generate a form of bytecode that's used by Pearl. What we don't have yet, and what this actually, my current project is to write a backend that will spit out Java bytecodes. I think I alluded to that earlier. Mm-hmm. But that's hopefully going to come out sometime this summer. That's my pet project. In the meantime, from the perspective of O'Reilly and Associates, we put out a Unix resource kit last fall for Perl. This spring, we're coming out with a resource kit for Win32. And that will have a number of interesting things in it, including a visual debugger, which from the reports from the beta testers is pretty zoomy. And it will essentially do for the Windows programmers what the Unix resource kit has done. And part of the purpose of the resource kits, of course, is to actually supply functionality to people in a convenient form. Another purpose of the resource kits, though, going back to this marketing idea, is to actually legitimize Perl in the business community. Freeware has a reputation among some managers as being schlockware, and which really aggravates those of us in the freeware community who do not produce schlockware. Having that box on the shelf legitimizes Perl in the eyes of the boss. He comes wandering and says, "What is this Perl thing?" And mm-hmm. you point up to the thing and say, "Well, you know, here's this standard distribution of Perl." And the boss says, "Okay, I know who to sue if it goes wrong."
Also along the lines of legitimizing the language, the first Perl conference was held last summer in San Jose. What did you take away from that, and are you going to have a second conference? What's planned for that?
Well, we thought we'd have a great conference if we had 300 people there, and we had 1,000 people there. It was, I've never been to something that was so simultaneously energizing and draining. There was just a great deal of excitement. You couldn't tell that the conference had been thrown together in 4 months. It was just fabulous. And we're going to have another one. I mean, it went so well, we're going to have another one next August. And we expect it to be even better. Just a lot of people there who really love to help other people. The Perl community is just something else. It's a little bit of heaven, I think.
Was the Cathedral and the Bazaar, was that written for that conference, or was that, did that come out before then?
It actually came out, it was presented at a Linux conference mm-hmm. first, but Tim O'Reilly heard of it and liked it so much there that we had Eric Raymond come and present it at the Perl conference as well. Tweaked suitably for the different circumstances, mm-hmm. but it's definitely been a very important paper in shaping our thinking as to what it is that does drive the freeware movement. Why is it so powerful when it is not, in fact, economically powerful on the surface of it? I know I was very impressed with it, and that was the first time I met Eric, and he's a character, but he's also a class act and really sharp. And I see that he is probably going to be at the forefront of defining the freeware movement for some time to come.
One last sort of biographical question. While I was researching for this interview, a couple of programmers told me that you had once been a missionary. Is that right?
Well, I was definitely studying to be one. My wife and I were studying linguistics in grad school with the idea of going probably to Africa to study languages, unwritten languages, figure out a way to write them down and to translate various things, including the Bible, into their languages. I could not do that for health reasons, and at the time, that was a very difficult decision to drop out of that. But you know, in retrospect, looking back, it was really the right thing. You know, and the organization I dropped out of now is using Perl to do a lot of their work. So I ended up doing more good for them by dropping out than than by keeping on.
And do you see any parallels between missionaryism and your role in the free software movement?
Oh, certainly. You know, the religious aspects of the Perl movement and the free software movement, but particularly the Perl movement, since I have control over that, I like to discourage and encourage those aspects simultaneously. There are positive aspects and negative aspects, and so there's a great deal of energy in people who think they have the gospel and want to spread it around. And if you can keep a bit of the balance in there so they don't go out and beat up other people, then that's worth something.